still dancing all the way to the Sweet 16 destination, our nation's capital. Next up for the Cardiac Cats, LSU baseball. Yeah, feeling okay, despite the fact that they lost two out of three. Two pitching performances makes you feel a lot better as the Tigers head to Murderer's Row, Starkville, Mississippi. Gymnastics, three-peat, SEC champions. Next up, the NCAA Regionals. Is this the year that they blast through the door and win it all? These stories plus, there's a clowny in the house. Today, Monday, March 25th, 2019.
Bigby Williams with a rebound. He'll hand it off to Waters. Again, Maryland looking for the three, not falling. Nice step to the basket. Waters drives in. Right-handed layup is good. 4-1 Tigers.
Tremont Waters, vintage Tremont Waters.
Waters in the front court to Bigby Williams. Cabell way up top. One dribble, throws underneath Reed. Quick turnaround, left-handed jam. How about that pass from Bigby Williams and the finish by Nas? Waters quickly in the front court. Between the rings, wants to drive, flips it over. Smart in the left corner to Mays. Catch and shoot three. Good! 67-64 Tigers! Waters with 9 seconds. Got to start moving. Down to 6 seconds. Waters off the screen. Waters going to drive. Try to get to the rim. Shot off the glass and in with 1.6 seconds. They lead 69-67 from half court. No good. Tigers win. Tigers win. Survive and advance here in Jacksonville.
I hold the ball, take the last shot, and not shoot the ball too quick so that they wouldn't have a chance to put it on the other end and put up a shot. So Coach Benford and coaching staff, they, and actually my teammates, they said they wanted me to take the shot. So we just held the ball out, and Nas came and set a screen, and I made a play.
Holy cow! 69-67, in the words of my friend from CBS, Bill Raftery. Onions! Yes, indeed. Oh, my goodness. Survive in advance. That's what it's all about. And LSU has done so. And they're moving on to the Sweet 16, where they will take on Michigan State, 6.09 p.m. this Friday from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Good afternoon, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. And we welcome you. My main man, CD, back in the Master Control Suite, in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Yours truly, Studio 1A. It's great to be. What a weekend it was. Basketball, gymnastics, softball. Just really, really good. And we got a busy day planned for you and yours. We'll tell you about that shortly. LSU gets the job done in a myriad of ways. But you heard during the highlight package that my producer extraordinaire, Clint Domain, put up, Skylar Mays hits a three to give LSU a 67-64 lead. What people don't recognize is, yes, he made the shot, but when he made the shot, he got a quick shot off to make sure LSU would have a two-for-one opportunity. Yes. Very smart. You only see that in the NBA. You never, rarely, if ever, see it collegiately. But Skylar Mays got it done at the 42nd mark, knowing full well that LSU would have another opportunity in the game if Maryland did something and tied it up. Well, Maryland did do something as Jalen Smith hit a big three ball, his first of the day, to give him 15 points and tied it up. LSU had about, I don't know, 13, 14 seconds or whatever it may be. So here is my buddy. Here is Tremont Waters talking about the most underappreciated player on this team, but who continues to excel with 16 points in 37 minutes, not a single turnover, two steals, one block, Tremont Waters on his backcourt mate, Skylar Mays. And Skylar Mays, again, getting it done. Getting it done. Just free throws, he's perfect. 4 for 4 for the game. Always wants the ball down the stretch. And that's what's so prevalent and so important in college basketball games, in the NCAA tournament, which has lived up to the billing and then some. And then some. But you got to have backcourt play, and LSU has two of the best. And here's the point guard talking about his running mate, Skylar Mays.
For us, it was like something we've seen every day, and, you know, he's very good at it. And, you know, just keeping calm is something he does best, and he keeps the coaching staff calm, the players calm. You know, he's a calm player who can get through adversity and do anything he can do in any moment by doing that.
Through all the crazes, and we should be used to this by now, right? We really should be used to the fact that LSU gets out to a big, big lead. They led 38-29 at the half. Maryland made a run to get it that close. Then LSU just, for whatever reason, just lets the other team get back in the game. And then Maryland took the lead. When it was tied, I don't think there was any doubt who was going to take the last shot. Tony Benford talked about the decision to give Tremont Waters the ball on the final play.
It was a play, you know, that we run. You know, we run it a few times during the year. And we knew a minute against man in zone, especially against that 3-2, you know, we had to do a great job of screening that top guy, the 3-2. And we told Nas, whoever's up there, if it's man in zone, just screen that guy and just put a body on him. And Nas did a great job. And Trey, you know, great players, made great plays. He made a great play.
They do. And we've seen this so many times. It's like, do you get worried late in the ball game? LSU's done this so many times throughout this remarkable, remarkable season, which is right now 28-6 overall, and one of the only 16 teams left with a chance to win it all. Tremont Waters says, hey, we prepare for this kind of stuff.
I wouldn't say so. You know, we prepare for it. The coaches do a great job of putting us in adverse situations in practice with the six-minute games that we do, and we'll start the 6 minutes down 7. And usually when it applies to the game, we're not in that type of situation or it's not as bad. So we feel like, you know, we're prepared for it and we can, you know, figure out a way to win. And we've been able to do that this year.
This team is unified. This team is together. It really is. And this team, as interim head coach Tony Benford says, this team is really, really tough. Because you got to be tough, considering all the adversity that this team has gone through. I mean, just time and time and time again. And it's, again, I'm so tired of the national media harping on this dark cloud over this program and the fact that the head coach is not there. They got to stop all that. It's time once and for all to celebrate the players on this team. The players, each and every one of them, and they all contribute in and of themselves. And that's what makes them unified, and that's what makes them so tough. Here's Coach Benford on this team's toughness.
We play 6th overtime in the SEC, the best league in the country, in my opinion. And I think what it is a closeness of this group, okay? They're not afraid of the moment. We sit there in the huddle. We knew a 3-minute game. We weren't, you know, playing as well as we needed to. And Skylar just said, Coach, so we're going to be okay. We're going to win this game. We're going to win this game. And so I just think that these guys, you know, we got multiple guys that can make plays off the bounce. Then you got Nas that can score inside. So when you got guys that can make plays and believe they can go make a play any time, regardless of the situation, it makes the job easier as a coach. And you know, you have a chance to win close games.
That was a big man's game. I'm telling you, with Bruno Fernando and Jalen Smith, they out-rebounded LSU 42-34. This is a game that gets them ready for what they're about to face with Michigan State. Maryland went zone. That's what got LSU out of their rhythm. LSU not a very good outside shooting team in the ballgame. They shot 37% from the field, 29% from three-point land. but they were really good at the free throw line, 14 of 16 from the stripe, 88%. Now, here's the deal. Michigan State is a better team than Maryland. They're tougher. They're more physical. They've got better players. However, Michigan State doesn't play zone. They don't do it. They play man-to-man. This ought to be a really, really good basketball game. Michigan State's not going to beat themselves, and if you get ahead of them, they're not going to give up. They're going to fight and claw back, and that's just the way they play. Just the way they play. So it should be a really, really good one. Coming up on the program, Bill Armstrong, one of the assistant coaches. There's three. It's a three-headed dragon, and they're all contributing and doing their part. Bill Armstrong will join us next to talk about this tough, fun, exciting, bites your fingernails off to the forever LSU basketball team. Then we'll head to East Lansing, Michigan. Mike DeFabo, of the a journalist for the Lansing State Journal. We'll talk about Tom Izzo and what's all this hubbub, the controversy about a coach getting after a player anyway, and the challenges that Michigan State provides. That's all coming up in this hour of the program. We'll talk about the second hour later, but we'll take our first time out of the day. We'll come back with Bill Armstrong. How about them Tigers? Next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Well, what a remarkable basketball season this has been. And it continues this Friday in our nation's capital when the LSU Tigers, all 28 wins and 6 losses this season, takes on Michigan State in the round of 16, Friday night, 6:09 tip, our time. One of the assistant coaches, and what a remarkable job this group has done to keep this team on their designated course. And we're joined by Bill Armstrong now. And Bill, congratulations. As a former LSU basketball player that's been in these situations, I know how satisfying and yet how incomplete it is at this point in time, but what a great run so far, and congrats.
Thank you, Jordy. Thanks for having me on. And like you said, it's a dream come true for all of us, but we're not done yet, and we're gonna prepare for this game on Friday and go out and play our game and give it our best shot to keep this thing going as long as we can.
I'm with you. Talk to me. Take me back. When we heard the unfortunate news, and there you are, Tony, Greg, yourself. Take me back to that first meeting. How did y'all decide how we're going to make this thing work and make it as seamless as possible to the most important people in the world, and that's your players in your locker room?
Yeah, it's all about those players. And we just met, and Coach Wade has prepared us so well, all of us, and we formed such a bond because of him and the family atmosphere that he, you know, represents every single day with us, the players, the managers, all the rest of the support staff. That, you know, we just talked it over and said that we weren't going to really change anything. We were going to keep the routine. Coach is very routine oriented, and that's what our guys have gotten used to. And we just tried to keep everything the same, doing it how Coach Wade's been doing it this whole time. And he prepared us for this moment and prepared our guys for this moment. We're trying to make the most of it.
How's your heart doing? Because there's a lot of LSU basketball fans. Hearts are just, man, you guys are something, man. I mean, this cardiac cath thing is about to kill me.
Well, you know, Jordy, it wouldn't have been prudent if we would have gone and blown anybody out here in the tournament. We haven't done that all year. That's just how we do it, you know. So we want to keep everybody on edge and make sure that everybody's excited about each and every minute of the game. So that's what we've been doing. But, yeah, that hadn't been good for my heart either. So I'd like to stop doing that, but I just believe that's who we are.
Yeah, you got to play to your strength, and that's what you do. And I don't know if there's is a better team in the country prepared for late game situations. I mean, you know, you practice what you preach, and you guys have practiced it, and by golly, you're really good down the stretch.
Well, it's really prepared us for it. You know, we do a thing every day at the end of practice, what Coach Wade calls a 6-minute game, and We put them in different adverse situations, and, you know, when you do that every single day and rep it, our guys get used to it. So once we get in the games, it's nothing that they haven't seen before. They've seen every different kind of scenario. Now, I'll be honest with you, we haven't put it up there where we're up 15 and we lose those leads and then get into those six-minute games. But that's how it's been working out for us lately. So they're still ready for it once it comes down to that six-minute games and pressure-packed situations. And, you know, it's just a testament to them. These kids, what they've done through – everything that they've been through this year is really nothing short of miraculous, and a testament to the character of the guys that we have. And they just bonded together through everything and just willed themselves to continue playing as long as we can.
Well said. Bill Armstrong, kind enough to join us. Look, everybody's talking about the Trey Waters layup, and deservedly so. But my goodness, I don't know if there's a more clutch player than Skylar Mays. I don't know if people understand this, but he made that three to put you up 67-64, and that was great. But I love the fact that he took it at a certain time frame where you knew you'd get one more possession. He did the 2-for-1 in college basketball. You don't see that very often. I thought that was brilliant.
Well, Skylar's such a great player, and then on top of that, such a cerebral player. And then, you know, he had thought that through again. That's something that, you know, we prepared him for and that he's prepared himself for. And he takes it. He does so much extra on the floor, off the floor, watching film, just to prepare himself. And he's been our rock all year long. And every time we need something like that, a big basket, and you remember the three he hit against Tennessee at home. Yeah. There's just numerous plays like that throughout the year that he's made that it might not be the tip in at Kentucky where Cavell got all the glory, or the final layup by Trey where obviously, you know, everybody talks about him being Mr. Clutch. But it's those plays that he makes that leads up to those moments. And that's just kind of his personality. He's our rock, and we know we can count on him. That's why we hardly ever take him out of the game.
That was a big man's game, particularly on the boards with Fernando and Smith and their big guards. That's got to prepare you for what you're about to face Friday, because Michigan State, year in, year out, always, always good on the glass and a very physical team. I think that was the best primer for you for that game coming up.
Without question, you know, those teams are very similar. They battled it out a couple times in Big Ten play, and it definitely will prepare us for this game Friday. We got to, you know, get our game plan together, and, you know, they're even better on that offensive glass than pretty much anybody in the country. So we got to just get our guys prepared that it's going to be a battle every time the ball gets shot, and we got to be willing to get five guys in that fight and rebound the ball.
You win by two. Your bench outscores their bench 26-13. I thought Days was really, really good. Emmett was really good. Javonte, his normal self, maybe didn't shoot it as well as normal, but he still contributed in his time frame. Those three coming off the bench, that's, man, when they're right, y'all are really, really good.
Well, that's the great part about this team. We've been saying it as a staff all year, inwardly and outwardly. I mean, we really have eight starters. All three of those guys are good enough to start on most teams in the country. And it's, again, a testament to them to be able to, you know, come off the bench. They've never done that their whole lives. And to be able to do that with the right attitude. And sometimes they play more, sometimes they play less, but they always come in and bring great energy and just make play after play. And all three of them contributed in a major, major way all on Saturday.
Bill Armstrong, LSU assistant coach. LSU beats Maryland 69-67, one of only 16 teams left in the country that are vying for a trip to the Final Four and the potential of a national championship. Take me back to the huddle, if you don't mind, and what was discussed, and how did it all come down to let's get the ball in Waters' hands and let him go to work?
Yeah, you know, it was my scout from mostly a defensive standpoint, Coach Benford and Coach Heyer, and I, with my input, just because I'd watched more games, came up with what we were going to try to do offensively throughout the game. And against their man-to-man, we were really hurting them. And then they threw that 3-2 zone at us that they haven't played a whole lot all year. And, you know, we got some good shots. We took some not-so-good shots. We got a little bit stagnant. And so in that last huddle, they discussed it, and we talked about running a play that we could run against man or zone, you know, thinking that maybe they would switch there in the end, thinking we'd be prepared for a zone. And so we came up with the, you know, the high ball screen for Trey, and that was about probably my biggest input is let's put it in Trey's hands and see if he can go make a play. And they drew up the play, and as you saw, it worked. They made us look good. Trey made us look good.
Yeah. Take us behind the scenes now. You know you're playing Michigan State. You got a long time. I mean, heck, you played on Saturday. You don't play again till Friday. So you got a lot of time to prepare. How do you coaches break it up? Who handles what in preparing for Tom Izzo's club?
Well, we're going to keep it a lot the same as we did going into the first round where, you know, we give them a couple days off and then we come back and we'll have some really good practices over the next 2 days before we leave. And then it'll kind of, you know, become more mental preparation on Thursday leading into Friday as far as that goes. And then we're just going to keep it the same as we've done all year. Coach Heyer will have Michigan State because, you know, he had Yale, I had Maryland, and then I will hopefully get the opportunity to have the game on Sunday as far as the scout. But, you know, we really tried to you know, all three lock in on each team and give our own input. And then whoever the scout coach is for that game kind of delivered it to the team.
Michigan State's really good in defensive efficiency. They're one of the best teams in the country. They don't play much zone. In fact, I think I saw where they've run five possessions of a zone defense all year long. Tom Izzo likes man-to-man, so you know what you're going to get. You know it's going to be physical, right? So you prepare your team for that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, offensively, them playing us man, we'll do a lot of things that we've always done, tweak a few things here and there. But, you know, we're talented offensively, and we're going to just continue to try to attack whoever it is that we play. Obviously, Friday will be Michigan State. And they're top 10 in the country in both defense and offense. They're a great team. And, you know, obviously Coach Izzo is a first ballot Hall of Famer. But, you know, we like our eight guys, and they're playing with a lot of confidence. So we'll just go out and continue to do what we've been doing all year.
Do you think? Bill, I know it's busy. From all of us that ever laced him up in the purple and gold, man, continued success. Stay healthy. We're all behind you 1,000%. And have a great week of practice. Safe flight to our nation's capital. And we'll be there as you take on Michigan State. All the best of luck. And thank you for your time today. Greatly appreciate it.
Jordy, I really appreciate you having me. And go Tigers.
All right, buddy boy, you take care. Tigers, Spartans, Friday night, 6:09 p.m. And, of course, you can hear the ball game right here. 103.7 The Game pregame show, 5:30. And then the Spartans and the Tigers. Gotta love it. We'll find out more about the Spartans next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Hey, we welcome you back. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. You know what they say, in March, it's Tom Izzo time. Year after year after year, he writes the ship of the Michigan State Spartans, and of course, they have advanced to the Sweet 16. LSU, Michigan State in Washington, D.C. this Friday night, 6:09 Central Time tip. Let's find out more about the Spartans. Mike DeFabo writes sports features for the Lansing State Journal. Of course, Michigan State in East Lansing, Michigan. Mike, thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jordy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Is this standard operating procedures in the minds of those that follow Michigan State basketball? This is what they expect?
Well, this definitely is what Michigan State fans and beat writers kind of expect out of Tom Izzo. But to be honest with you, the last couple years, people have been disappointed. The last couple years, Tom Izzo has had uncharacteristic early exits in March. They lost in the second round last season, the year before that, second round again. And the year before that, they were upset in the first round. You guys might remember that, the Middle Tennessee upset, the 15-2 matchup. So for the guys on the team right now, there's only one guy who was a redshirt player who had made it outside of the first weekend. So this was really a big weekend for Tom Izzo in the Spartans. So I think there's maybe a sense of relief a little bit that the pressure's off of them now, that they kind of got that monkey off their back and they're finally back in the second round of the tournament. But as you mentioned, Tom Izzo has a knack for getting to the Final Four. He knows how to do things here. So now it's up to Coach Izzo to see if he can maybe do it again and get back to his eighth Final Four.
Mike DeFabo, kind enough to join us. Okay, we got to talk about the Bradley game and the incident. If you sign up with Tom Izzo, you know what you're getting. I don't understand why people are in an uproar after he got after the freshman, Aaron Henry. That seems to me to be typical Tom Izzo. You're closer to the scene. What is the feeling? What are the people saying about that?
You know, it's kind of interesting. A couple days before the incident, I was talking with Aaron Henry, and, you know, he has been somebody that Tom Izzo has been critical of for good reason. He's a freshman who has had to step up in the absence of Josh Langford, one of their veteran players, and played much more than ever was expected out of him. And so he's been going through this all season, and not just him. Anyone who plays for Michigan State has been, you know, what I would characterize as hard coaching. You know, I think that that's all it is. I don't think it's much more than that. But Aaron Henry, days before any of this happened, said, you know, my high school coach was just like this. He was the same way. I signed up for this because this is the way that I respond. I like a coach like this who demands excellence out of me and wants the best for me. And it was interesting that then this became kind of a national storyline when it blew up, because this is not uncommon. If you watch Michigan State basketball, you know, Coach Izzo is a hard-nosed, tough kind of coach. But I don't think this is uncommon. Even if you would probably go out to an LSU football practice, I'm sure this same thing happens. You know, if you go out to any number of different sporting events, this is the way that a lot of coaches still coach their players. I don't personally have a problem with it, as long as the players don't have a problem with it. But I don't know. I mean, I do see that there is a line, but I don't think that Tom Izzo came even close to approaching that line.
I'm with you. Mike DeFabo, kind enough to join us. You've had some really good some guards that have worn that green and white at Michigan State, but you got a pretty good one right now, Cassius Winston. What does Izzo say about him and how significant of a role he plays in the success of that ball club?
Yeah, today he described Cassius Winston as the straw that stirs the drink. And it's kind of funny in some ways, because Izzo is a very passionate guy, and obviously that got him in a little bit of trouble. But Cassius Winston is this steady, calm, unflappable guard, which is exactly what you want at the point guard position. And his biggest attribute, I would say, other than the fact that he stays calm under pressure, is he's an incredible passer. Michigan State coach Tom Izzo has described him as the best passer at Michigan State since Magic Johnson, which is saying something. And he's interesting because he's not very athletic. You know, he's not super fast. He's not incredibly quick. When you see him, he's not really strong. He has no real muscle definition. But he's just a really crafty player. He knows the game of basketball, knows how to get his teammates involved. And then when the situation comes, he can definitely create for himself as well.
And he's very good at calming his coach down a little bit, right? I mean, that leadership, right?
That's right, yeah. He's stepped up and become more of a leader, because he's more of a lead-by-example kind of guy. But now Michigan State has had a number of big-time injuries that they've had to go through this season, and more has been placed on Cassius Winston's shoulders, and he's been handling it really well.
What have you seen? You've watched LSU play in this tournament. What are your initial thoughts of this matchup coming up?
Well, one big thing that interests me is just the rebounding, because obviously LSU is an athletic team, and they do a tremendous job on the board, especially offensive rebounding. What I'm curious about is, you know, Michigan State is a team that also prides itself on rebounding. So you wonder who's going to win that matchup. But then as you dive into that matchup a little bit more, I think LSU sends a lot of guys to the offensive board to try to get those second-chance points, whereas Michigan State likes to run in transition. So that transition offense from Michigan State, I'm curious if they can take advantage of LSU's aggressive nature and maybe use it against them, where then, you know, Michigan State will get out in transition, get some easy baskets, because that is one thing about Tom Izzo teams. They love to run. You know, they love to push the ball in transition. Cassius Winston is the guy to do it for them.
Right.
So I'm curious about that for sure.
We've had a common opponent, obviously. Michigan State has played Maryland. LSU's played Maryland. You're two Big Ten teams. Tell me about the Michigan State-Maryland series this year. Tell me what you remember about it.
Well, it's interesting because Maryland has the big men kind of like Michigan State, but yeah. I would say that Michigan State has better guard play. And also I would say, I don't think it's a hot take around the Big Ten to say that Michigan State has better coaching than Maryland
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
So I think that Michigan State, they have some similarities to Maryland. They both have good bigs. They both have athletic players. But Michigan is just a more refined version of Maryland, I would say. They both have the issues turning the basketball over. That's going to be a big question mark in this game for Michigan State for sure. They turned the ball over 22 times against Minnesota. And I know LSU is good at forcing those turnovers. So that's a big question. But overall, I would just say, Maryland has for years been around the fifth best team in the Big Ten, kind of right around that point, whereas Michigan State has been the class of the Big Ten for years now. And once again, they won the Big Ten regular season and the Big Ten tournament. So mm-hmm. Michigan State just clicking at a higher level.
69-55, you beat them in the regular season. Did you play them more than once or just once?
It was just the one time this season.
Yeah.
The Big Ten expanded from 18 to 20 games this season in conference play. And that's really something that Michigan State has had to survive. You know, they've dealt with a number of injuries because it was a brutal Big Ten season. So they play 20 games, whereas most conferences only play 18 now. Then they play three games in the Big Ten tournament and win that. Then they play another Big Ten team, Minnesota. So I'm sure that Michigan State players are looking forward to playing someone outside of their conference for once.
Yeah. LSU, Michigan State, Friday night in Washington, D.C. Such a great history in that program. I'm sure the fans will travel and travel quite well to D.C. for this upcoming regional.
Oh, yeah, without question. Michigan State fans, you can find them pretty much all over the country at this point. So I think that it'll be a loud environment. I'm sure it'll be a good game, too. I think mm-hmm. LSU will give them a run for their money. We'll have to see what ends up happening here on Friday night.
We know about Cassius Winston. We know about an offensive rebounding team that likes to run. Who is, when you need a big shot and they guard Cassius Winston and he needs an outside shot, who's your go-to guy?
I would say the go-to shooter is Matt McQuaid. He's about a 6'6 wing player from Texas. He grew up watching Michigan State, though, because his dad's from Michigan. And he has evolved as his career has gone on. He was a guy who maybe didn't have a lot of confidence early in his career, even though he had what some people described as one of the best pure shooting motion of any high school player at the time. But he's a guy now that he will hit big shots. He had, I think, 27 points in the Big Ten championship game in the tournament. And he's also evolved as a defensive guy. So I'm curious who Michigan State will choose to guard Waters, whether it's going to be Matt McQuaid, who's the mm-hmm. 6'6 guy, or whether Cassius Winston, the point guard, is not really too much of a defensive guy. So I'm kind of curious on that matchup if the Spartans will choose to put McQuaid on Waters or what they'll do there.
And to your point, I'm curious to see what LSU's going to do as far as who's going to guard Cassius Winston. Tremont Waters so valuable, you can't get him in foul trouble. I'm very curious to see what LSU does there. If I mention the word Indiana, do you cringe? How the heck did you guys lose twice to Indiana?
It's bizarre because Indiana, pretty much the only times that they've played well has been against Michigan State.
Yeah,
Michigan State lost twice to IU. And, IU had a little bit of a weird season. They've got a five-star guy who's probably going to be a lottery pick in Romeo Langford. Another guy, Juwan Morgan, who's a forward, he's one of the best players in the Big Ten. Somehow they had this terrible, terrible season where things just fell off the rails for them. But seemingly the only time that they played well was against Michigan State. And it very nearly cost Michigan State the Big Ten title or a share of the Big Ten title. They had to get a little bit of help from Purdue in the final week of the season to put things back together. What I would recommend to LSU, maybe throw on a couple Hoosier jerseys because there's something about them that Michigan State just doesn't play well against them.
Seven-game winning streak for the Spartans. Maryland threw up a 3-2 zone that really stymied LSU. But Izzo, there is no zone in Izzo, is there?
No. I think it's against his religion. Okay. All they do is that hard nose in your face kind of defense. So it'll be a different kind of style for sure. Michigan State, they do what they do. You know, they rely on rebounding, running, physical, hard-nosed, tough play. So they do what they do, and then they kind of just we'll see if they can see if LSU can beat them at their own game.
What do teams do? You haven't lost many games, and we mentioned Indiana. There was a stretch where you lost three in a row in Big Ten play. But what have those? What did those teams do effectively to beat Michigan State, or was it just Michigan State had a bad shooting night?
It was a combination of a couple of things. So the first one they lost was to Purdue, and Purdue shot the ball well. And Michigan State has a bad habit of getting off to really bad starts. And so that was another example where Michigan State got themselves in a hole, kind of came into the game a little bit lackadaisical, and then by the time they turned it on, it was too late. So that's one recipe would be if you get off to a fast start against Michigan State. The second loss that they had in a row in that three-game stretch was to Indiana. And Indiana, as I mentioned, they were a terrible three-point shooting team, and all of a sudden they went off from three-point range. So, if they encounter a team that maybe shoots a little unexpectedly well, which is kind of what Bradley did in the first half against them, making 6 of 9 three-pointers in the first half, that could be a problem. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was Illinois. Illinois plays a really up-and-down style of basketball. They're one of the most unique teams in the Big Ten in that department. Because you think of the Big Ten, you think more teams that grind out possession.
Right, right. Well, LSU wants to get up and down the floor. You say Michigan State likes to run out of their defense and push the pace. Should be a really good one. I know this is only the second time these two teams have met. They've both been in the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. You guys got us pretty good back when you had that guy named Irvin Magic Johnson and Greg Kelser and Jay Vincent in that group. So we'll see if this group of Tigers can beat that group of Spartans. I like the old Spartan team better than this current one. You got Hall of Famers on that old team, man. So maybe LSU has a shot here. We'll see. All right, there you go. Mike DeFabo. Mike, thank you so much for your time. Yeah, that was back in 1979, and Magic and company en route to a national championship where they played up against Larry Bird and Indiana State, and that kind of was the highest, still to this day, the highest-ranked college basketball game in the history of college basketball on television. And, of course, those two would resume it and really ignite the NBA with the Lakers and the Celtics. So, again, LSU, Michigan State, Friday night in Washington, D.C., 6:09 tip, 5:30 pregame show, and then the call of the game right here on 103.7 The Game. You better get your hard hat on. Michigan State's not going to let you get away. They're going to keep battling and keep battling. LSU's going to have to make it a 94-foot game, I think. If it slows down to a half-court game, don't like it. If it's up and down the floor, I like it. Put the ball in Waters' hands and let's roll. Let's roll. All right, we'll take a timeout. Come back, wrap up this hour of the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, 51 minutes after the hour. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, brought to you by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Bro Briggs. Frankie's a huge sports fan. He'll talk your ear off, but you'll also get the very best products out there for your travel needs, whatever it may be. He's got it for you, for one and all, ages young to old. He's got it in that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. It is the best. It is the best. The cheeseburger out. Standing. That is D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Bro Bridge. Again, this LSU basketball team will travel. They'll practice up in D.C. They'll play on Friday. And all this uproar, national media, they've got to get off this story. Look, it's been multiple games now where Will Wade is not around. It's got to move past all this. And this is the last time I'm going to say it, because I'm getting emails and texts from people just outraged over national media people talking about everything but the basketball team. And that's a disservice to Tremont Waters and Cavell Bigby-Williams and Naz Reid and Skylar Mays and Javonte Smart and Emmett Williams and Darius Days and on and on and on. It's a disservice. These kids work hard. They have done a tremendous, tremendous job. And they need to be recognized for that. They really, really do. There was a lot of people that didn't give LSU a shot in this thing. A lot. But there's something about a group of kids that get together, that have each other's back, that have this indomitable will to win and to believe in each other. It's an easy team to coach. They just play, and they play hard. They're not perfect. They're far, far from it. But in late-game situations, they're pretty darn good. Just get it to the last 6 minutes, and let's take your chances. Now, they face a Herculean test. Michigan State will be a very, very physical ball club, but I think Maryland has prepared them for that. Maryland was big. They were tough. They were gigantic on the boards, and they never quit. It was a physical, physical game. But Skylar Mays, free throws, three ball down the stretch. And then the coolest cat on the court late, Tremont Waters, gets a little scoop to the hoop at the perfect time to win it. Perfect. You don't give Maryland any chance to get the ball, call timeout, and draw up a play. You just shoot it, knowing that the worst thing that's going to happen is you go to overtime. Then you really like your chances, because they're pretty darn good in overtime. SEC, pretty darn good. Pretty darn good. LSU, Kentucky, Tennessee, all in it, and Auburn. That's four. You get about $1.5 million for each team for every round they get to. That's lining the SEC coffers right there. So they're in good shape. They're in really good shape. There's a lot of good teams out there, man. A lot of good teams. And it's going to be, I think there have been blowouts, but there have been some really, really good games. And I just want to tell you how badly I feel for Central Florida, how badly I feel for Johnny Dawkins, the coach, and the young Dawkins, the player. Father-son combination. But, man, you got to make those plays down the stretch. They had the 2-on-1 advantage. They threw the alley-oop, and they mishandled it. My goodness gracious, that makes it a 6-point game, and it's over. Then you got to block out on free throws. Fundamental plays, you got to block out. It's almost like you got to play a perfect game when you play Duke, because they just figure out a way. Son of a gun. And then the missed drive and the tip that hung on the rim and fell off. I just feel awful for Central Florida. I must give Mike Krzyzewski kudos. No one handles a situation like that better than he. That was a former player of his coaching that team. That was a kid who was like a ball boy at Duke. That's hard, but he handles it with such. You may not like Coach Krzyzewski. You may think they're the biggest, cheatingest program in the world. But in that scenario, no one better than Coach K. Oh, the Sweet 16's good. There's a lot of chalk in this, baby. I think the best teams are still in it. Very, very few monumental upsets. Very few. The cream of the crop is set, and I cannot wait. All right, hour number one is history. We got a busy hour number two. Gymnastics, LSU baseball, LSU football recruiting. What? We got it all right here on Acadiana's number one sports station. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Live. live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Today in hour number two of two, it's Monday. How's your Monday going? Hope it's going great. School zone's in effect. Kids are out and about. So be careful. Buckle up as you're out on the highways and byways. Stay off that cell phone. It is March 25th, a busy second hour we have planned for you and yours. LSU Gymnastics wins their third straight SEC championship. Associate Head Coach Jay Clark will join us to talk about that. LSU Baseball. Yeah, they did lose two out of three, but to a very good fifth-ranked Georgia team. Zach Hess was brilliant on Friday. Cole Henry was brilliant on Saturday. Got no run support. Then the Tigers rally late on Sunday. Came up just a little bit short. Jeff Palermo was on the call of those games. He will join us. And Jadeveon Clowney's cousin has committed to LSU. Another edge pass rusher, Billy Embody, go 247 Sports, will join us as well. So with all that in mind, let's get right to it. We do it every day at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Gail Benson, all these little birds chirping, talking about the Pelicans moving to Seattle. Gail Benson says, I will never, ever sell this team. Okay. I hope not. I hope not. CD, good afternoon, my friend.
Good afternoon, Jordy. I've been having James Taylor stuck in my head all weekend because how sweet it is that LSU is in the sweet
16. How sweet it is to be in yes. the sweet 16.
Yes, indeed.
Tell me,
Jordy.
Baby. Yes, okay, go ahead.
How can we not have James Taylor on the brain after Saturday's game? I wasn't able to watch the final moments, Jordy, but I know you were.
What?
Hey, Jordy, I was on the road at the time, Jordy, so I was able to listen in on 103.7 okay. The Game. So I was all able right. to catch the end of it, but trust me, I okay. saw the video. We're not going to talk about the did he travel or did he not.
No, indeed.
But I just want to talk about, was that the most nervous you've ever been watching an actual game? Because I know whenever you're...
Heck no. I'd have been much more nervous if we were down one or two. I knew that the worst thing that would possibly happen is the thing goes to overtime.
Yeah.
So LSU had control of the ball game. I'm just glad the shot went in. I don't know if I could take another 5 minutes of that team. Jeez Louise. So they are just tough on the old heartbeat. My goodness.
Oh, exactly, Jordy. That's probably the craziest thing coming out of this weekend is just LSU still in it, heading into Michigan State. And we'll get to that in a little bit, Jordy, because okay. I got a couple questions for you about
okay.
that.
Okay.
But when you look at the SEC as a whole, Jordy,
yeah, baby.
It just means more, but it also just means four left in the NCAA yes. tournament. Very is the good. SEC a basketball conference now?
Heck to the yeah. Yes, indeed. Why not? Yes. I mean, 4 out of 16 ain't bad.
No,
not bad at all.
Not bad at all, Jordy. And it's just, you look at all the teams that are still in there, they're really good teams. Hypothetically, what would you put the odds of an all-SEC Final Four being?
Oh, wait a minute. Slow your roll on that one. I'm not gonna give, I say 0% chance on that one, big boy. Zero.
I had to throw it out there, Jordy, just okay. for fun right there.
I'm dumb, but I'm not stupid. Come on.
I know that, Jordy. I know that all too well. Moving over to the world of the NFL. Big news coming out Sunday about Rob Gronkowski, wow. everybody's favorite party boy, hanging up the cleats, at least for the time being. We saw what happened with Jason Witten. Now he wound up seeing how it yeah. was outside yeah. the world of football. But just looking at Gronk, where does he rank in your mind amongst the all-time great tight ends?
I think he is the greatest. Not only did he catch the football, but if he never caught a pass, never caught a touchdown, his value as a blocking tight end, immeasurable. So you put the two together, I think he is the greatest of all time, and he had fun doing it. And I loved Gronk. He was a he was a nightmare mismatch. Yeah. The Patriots would send him out wide to the right or wide to the left, and then Tom Brady knew exactly what kind of defense the team was in, and it just made life easier for everybody else. I'm really curious to see now. I think they've lost players left and right, the Patriots, and they just seem to reload. They've never lost a player of this caliber. I'm anxious to see how they respond to this.
Exactly, Jordy. It's huge when you look at the future of the Patriots franchise because Rob Gronkowski, he's been kind of a cornerstone of it. And it got me thinking because obviously the biggest free agent signing yet to have happened. I don't know what's going on with Jared Cook.
Don't say it.
He's been taking forever to sign on the dotted line. But what do you think? Does this change a lot for Jared Cook? Does he wind up not signing with the Saints and going over to New England to try and get that Super Bowl ring? Because it feels like things could be looming for this team to just throw the money at him, or does it wind up happening and we see Jared Cook go to the Patriots instead of the Saints?
God, I hope not. But you bring up a great point. It has taken forever. Why? Why has it taken forever?
Feels like a month.
I know. Something smells rotten in Denmark. That's all I can say. I'm not sure. I don't know.
There's a lot going on right now with him. But, man, Jordy, Johnny Manziel made his debut.
I missed it. How'd he do?
He did okay, Jordy. He did okay. Okay. But apparently people were sick of it a little bit, the whole Johnny Manziel story. Are you getting tired of it, Jordy, or are you just looking forward to seeing him have a little bit of redemption after everything that's happened over the last few years?
You know, I always hope everybody, you know, bounces back from adversity and does well. I got to be honest with you, I didn't even think about watching a second. I could care less.
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard, Jordy, when you think about it, with all the March Madness going on, all the great games on tap.
Yeah.
I think this was going on around the same time that wild Duke UCF ball game.
Oh, don't do that.
That was ridiculous, Jordy.
Don't do that to me. I feel so badly for them. I really, really do. How do you do that? Dawkins, father-son combination. Yeah. The son was great all game long. And oh, my God, the tip-in that rolled and hung on the rim. I feel terrible for him. And Duke, you lucky dog.
Lucky That's what dog. I'm about to say. It feels like everything bounces the Duke Blue Devils way, Jordy. It's insane.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, looking at some of the other things coming out of the weekend that was, I mean, it was definitely a busy one. You were mentioning LSU a little bit earlier. Dropping 2-3 to Georgia. But my goodness, Zach Hess showed us that he can be the dude if need be. It was phenomenal to see him do the things that he did. Yeah,
his best performance ever as an LSU Tiger. And look, Cole Henry wasn't too shabby
either. Exactly.
On Saturday, he just got no run support. So the thing that concerns, look, this is far from a finished product. Again, they get good pitching, they get no hitting. They get poor pitching, they have good hitting. Can they just put the two together? Defense is going to be there, but can they just pitch it and hit it at the same time? Now you got something. The potential's there. But, man, look, they got to go to Starkville Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Mississippi State might be the hottest team in the country. They only scored 40 runs, 40 in their three-game series this past weekend, 40 over Auburn. So, I mean, my God, you talk about starting the season murderer's row at Georgia, at Mississippi State, and the Tigers have not done very well on the road. They're only 1-6 this year on the road. Ooh.
Oh, it's been rough, Jordy, on the road. And, you know, before we wrap up Hot Topics, we got to talk about it. March 16th, 1979. Jordy Holtberg probably had a whole heck of a lot more hair up against a young Irvin Magic Johnson.
Yes.
And Jordy Holtberg puts up one more point than Magic Johnson, a NBA Hall of Famer. 25 points in 28 minutes against Magic Johnson.
No three-point line either.
No three-point line. No three-point line. No three-point line at the time. But what? Chat me up on this game, Jordy. Chat me up on this game.
Magic Johnson was so good. He had two other NBA players on his team. We tried everybody in the world. I think he had 24 points and about 13, 14 assists. He was like 16 of 17 from the free throw line. We tried everybody on him. His derriere was so wide and so big, you couldn't get around him. He was as great as advertised at 6'9 as a point guard. We tried everything. They just were a better team. No questions asked. They went on to win the NCAA championship. I had one of those games where the shot was falling, and they kept giving it to me. So, you know, it was a good day for me personally, but a bad day for us collectively.
Yep.
Michigan State, definitely the better team. Market Square Arena, and that was in the Sweet 16. Michigan State won. They went on and played Notre Dame with Digger Phelps and Kelly Trepuka. And then they won that one, got to the Final Four, and of course beat Larry Bird and Indiana State. But it was a good one. We reminisced about that many, many years ago in L.A.
Yeah.
Byron Scott coaching the Hornets, his wife's 50th birthday party. Magic was there. I was there. We shook hands. He remembered. It was very flattering, the things that he said, but they kicked our butt. All right, that's it. Hot topics.
Hey, Jordy,
is over.
Jordy.
Yes.
When are we getting Magic on?
I put out a call to him.
Yeah.
I have put out a feeler, and we're trying.
Just make sure to tell him don't take Anthony Davis from us.
He may avoid us because it may be a collusionary thing. Anyway, there you go. Hot topics brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet for nearly 90 years now. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Talk about better. LSU Gymnastics, 3 straight SEC titles.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Oh, what a weekend it was for LSU's gymnastics program. Not one, not two, but 3-peating in the SEC championships. 3 straight titles. It all happened Saturday night in New Orleans in the Smoothie King Center. Assistant coach Jay Clark, kind enough to join us to share his thoughts on what a spectacle it was. Jay, congratulations to you, the entire coaching staff, and those great athletes. What a Saturday night in the Crescent City.
Well, you know, it was an amazing atmosphere, Jordy. I appreciate you congratulating us. It was a wonderful atmosphere, as is virtually everything that's done, in Louisiana. The enthusiasm was going on around the event, and certainly our fan base showed out in a big way and just created probably the most electric atmosphere I've ever experienced in my 29 years of doing this in this conference, and it was just really exciting.
10,550 fans packed the Smoothie King Center. Did you have a home court advantage there a little bit?
Oh, I think we did. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Anytime you get to this time of the year, teams are fatigued, a little bit tired, and there's no doubt that when we came into that arena and just the sheer volume when they announced LSU, it was something that gave our kids a shot in the arm, provided us with a little bit of adrenaline and a little extra juice, if you will, and I think they really capitalized on it and helped us gain a lot of momentum through the meet. We knew that we were probably going to be tested early and maybe even be behind, but we told our kids if they stayed close going into the final rotation that we knew Florida had been a little weak on vault all year long, and we thought we could catch them if we stayed close enough, and that's exactly how it played out.
Yeah, exactly how it played out. How good is it to be able to finish on the floor? How does that come about? And I've got to believe with your athletes, that's exactly where you want to finish a meet.
Well, we like it because it's like a home meet rotation. So not only are we in front of our home crowd, but it's the same pattern that they've fallen into, with being at home. And we were able to do that because we became, in the last week of the regular season, we did just enough to jump Florida in the rankings and became the number one overall seed going into the meet. So we were able to choose where we started, and where we chose to start was as much about our own comfort level as it was also knowing that they may struggle with that event being their last event. So it was kind of twofold that way, and it worked out to be the best rotation for us.
Awesome. You make the strong comeback in the final rotation to seal the win. Tell me about... I mean, you talk about going out in style. This little Sarah Finnegan, holy cow. I got to be honest with you, Jay. I'm watching it on the TV, and it says all she needs is a 9.9 something. 9-9, and LSU clinches the championship. I mean, they make it sound so laissez-faire. That's not easy, but she did it.
Well, those commentators have seen her do it over and over and over again, and they know when Sarah Finnegan steps up pretty much on any event, that's pretty much the standard that she has set. So it became apparent to us after Kennedy Edney went fourth and Lexi Priestman had gone 9-9 in the third spot, that all it was going to take from Sarah and or McKenna Kelly was just their normal deal. That was when we realized we were going to win that thing. And it was pretty amazing. Sarah Finnegan, in my opinion, you don't want to speak in absolutes, but she is absolutely, in my opinion, the best athlete, the most consistent athlete I've ever been around. And am I glad she's on our team, because she really nailed it. Put the final nail in the coffin for us.
That is incredible praise, considering the great athletes that you guys have had. My goodness. Did you know it was a 10? Can you tell just in watching?
Well, you never know. I mean, it's subjective to some degree. And you had four judge panels there, so you need three of them to agree in order to get that, because you throw the high and the low out and average the middle two. So the only way you're going to get a 10 is if three of them agree. I knew it was the best routine I'd seen her do in a couple of months. But you just never know how each judge is going to see it and what their angle of vision is and what they pick up on. But I thought it was pretty darn good, and I figured it was going to be at least a 9.95. But to get a 10 in a championship meet with four judge panels is a tough thing to do.
It's remarkable. Jay Clark, LSU Gymnastics. That wasn't, she ended it with a perfect 10, but she also won four titles on Saturday. Yeah. Describe to the listening audience when they hear the score 39.800, what is that for a basketball player or a baseball player? How does that average out?
That would be a triple-double in basketball, where every category was somewhere in double digits, all three of it's her perfection on every event would give her a perfect 40. She's two tenths away from getting a perfect 40 on all four events. I mean, that's just it's unheard of. It's ridiculous. It's something that you see those things once in a generation. Those kinds of performances. And she's done it two weeks in a row now.
Jay Clark, kind enough to join us. You're ranked third in the country, and I love – this is like the perfect storm, Jay. I'm just saying now. This is just a neutral observer here, but you get to go to New Orleans for the SEC championships, and now you get to stay at home to host the NCAA regional April 5th and 6th. Is there a more confident group in the country than what the group that you're coaching now?
Well, I think our kids are believing now. You know, we started a little bit slower this year, some of that by design, some of that by necessity. And we took our lumps a little bit, but it's a little different than what we've done the previous years. But we always believed that this team could do everything that you're seeing them do now, and I think they're starting to believe. So I definitely think the confidence has really risen over the last 4 or 5 weeks, and that's been manifested in the way that our kids have performed, both at home and on the road. And certainly being at home and being in front of our fan base is going to be a big advantage for us. And we're certainly hopeful that, people will stick around after the spring game and maybe go to their favorite watering hole for a few minutes and then come over and watch the second day at regional and create an atmosphere like it was in New Orleans for us. But it's definitely a confidence builder for us to be here. We've got a new format to the regional situation this year, and with that being said, it gives us a little more comfort to be in our own environment and not to have to get on the road and go travel out west or something like that.
Mom told me there's no such thing as a stupid question, so I'm going to throw it out there. Does that performance Saturday night in New Orleans, is that the type of performance that can win a national championship?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. I think, we've got a tough road to hoe, and that's a given. Once you get to that level, Oklahoma, UCLA will be the favorites, I'm sure. But I think There's several teams that are in that mix. I think Florida's in that mix. I think we're definitely in that mix now, and maybe one or two others that really will be, duking it out if everything goes, if chalk holds, as they say. We'll see what happens when we get to April. But, you know, first things first, we gotta get through this two-day format, and our bodies are, this time of the year, you know, sometimes you hold them together with Band-Aids and duct tape, but it's we've just got to make good decisions, train smart, not try to do too much this time of year. You know, less is more. And so if they can walk out of the gym feeling good every day and continue to build their confidence, I think we're going to see a great showing at regionals and then hopefully be able to translate that to the national championships. And, look, we're in it, man. We keep knocking on the door.
And I keep
saying this to anybody who listen. One of these days, if you hang around and go long enough, you're going to score. And you just kind of we just got to keep knocking on the door. We've been second twice and within 0.2 last year. And I know this year started a little rough. I think people kind of went, well, they're coming back to earth. Look, we're not going anywhere. We've got great kids now. We got great kids coming. We're excited about the future of this program. And we want to win this thing for everybody in Tiger Nation, and so we're going to give it everything we got.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I'll just make one prediction. That joint, come the first weekend of April, it'll be packed to the proverbial rafters. Again, man, congratulations. Job well done. You'll find out more. You got a press conference coming up later on today. With all the information, but who's going to be coming down here and all that. So, man, enjoy it. Exhale a little bit and then train wisely. But, Jay, always great talking to you, and congratulations to everyone involved with the gymnastics program. To say a three-peat in modern era of sports, that don't happen very often, my friend, so congrats.
Thank you so much, Jordy. I appreciate you having me on, and I hope that everybody will get out there. Typically, the regional sales do not do what the regular season does. I want LSU and Baton Rouge to let everybody know that that's not the case in South Louisiana. And let's pack the PMAC one more time this year.
You're the best. Jay Clark, congratulations.
All right, take care, buddy.
A three-peat, SEC champions, and Sarah Finnegan. Holy cow, can that girl do it? She is amazingly awesome. All right, we'll take a quick time out here. Not such great news for LSU baseball. They lose 2 out of 3 at Georgia, but people feeling better about this baseball team. Jeff Palermo joins us next. He was on the call of the games in Athens and share his thoughts when we return. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back, boys and girls. LSU baseball after last week, 2 up. 2 down. They beat Nichols on a Wednesday. They won the opener against the Georgia Bulldogs on Friday, then lost 2 close ones Saturday and Sunday. Chris Blair was in Jacksonville for the LSU basketball game, so our good friend Jeff Palermo does an outstanding job calling baseball games, was in Athens, Georgia, so I wanted to get a firsthand approach as to how this LSU baseball team is. After the weekend, Jeff, kind enough to join us. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jordy. How about yourself?
I'm terrific. You couldn't ask for a better performance out of Zach Hess. I mean, I think he silenced a lot of the skeptics and critics with what he did on Friday night. A one-zip shutout, that's pretty darn good.
It was awesome. It was a great performance from Zach Hess, and you're right. I think he silenced a lot of critics by what he was able to do against a really good Georgia team that had only 2 losses on the season coming into that game. Granted, the Bulldogs haven't played nearly as tough a schedule as LSU, but still, that was a really good performance on another team's home diamond. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the best that we've ever seen Zach Hess. And he seems like he's pretty confident right now. I think he's pushed some injury issues away. I think, you know, he was bothered by a groin in the preseason, and he got hit in the bicep by a comebacker earlier this season. And now the guy is full of confidence, health-wise, his arm's feeling good, and he's willing to take the ball right now and shut out opposing teams. And that was a great performance from him, and LSU figured out how to score a run, and they were able to win that first game.
We'll get to that figuring out how to score a run shortly, but I thought Cole Henry on Saturday was just about as impressive. He just got no run support.
Yes, he was really good too. I mean, Cole Henry's another guy that it seems like this, and even though Eric Walker gave up the grand slam yesterday, Jordy, it does seem like the starting pitching is coming around, and that even though the bullpen gave up a few runs yesterday, I think guys are figuring out their roles in the bullpen as well. You know, there's still probably a question mark with Todd Peterson as the closer, but with Zach Hess, what you saw from Cole Hill, which was really fantastic to make his first SEC road start and pitch that well and strike out as many guys as he did. I think he ended up with one more strikeout than Zach Hess. It could have been, it might have been even more of a dominating performance. Unfortunately, a leadoff walk in the eighth inning led to two runs that scored, and LSU was also really terrific throughout the three games of not giving out free passes. That's been something that's been an issue so far this year, but they looked really good in that department as well. So I really think, like I said, even Eric Walker's outing, just a guy hit a grand slam on you, it's going to happen. I think really all three of those guys, and Walker will continue to get better as the season goes along. I think LSU's got something to really build from as far as what they're seeing out of their starting pitching.
And maybe when Jaden Hill returns to full health, who knows? But to your point, only four walks issued all weekend, none on Friday, one on Saturday, three on Sunday. That's incredible improvement from a team just against Texas where they just seem to walk everybody. So I don't know what's going on, but maybe they just had one of those good weekends.
Well, you had Landon Marceau, who started in that series against Texas. You had a Zach Hess, who was still trying to get in the groove of the season. And I think it was kind of a perfect storm there. The weather wasn't great. And LSU just, it's one of those things that's contagious, right, Jordy? Some guys, when you're not hitting, the whole team seems to not be hitting. Then a few guys get hot, and then the whole team gets hot. And I think that's the same thing here pitching-wise is that they had a lot of guys that were just struggling, and it gets in the back of your mind. And I really kind of thought they started to make a turn on limiting walks back in the Cal series. Paul Maneri got Devin Fontenot straightened out, and then Fontenot went out there and he pitched three solid innings of shutout baseball and was terrific in that series, and he followed it up with five innings against Kentucky. And then when you see one guy do it, they all kind of do it. And now that you got your ace in Zach Hess throwing nothing but strikes, I think everybody, there's a competition among everyone to know that, hey, you could throw strikes, and Paul Maneri has kind of said it all season. They got the defense that they're going to make plays. So get it in the zone, not over the heart of the plate, but give the opposing hitter maybe a chance to hit it, but not hit it hard and let your defense make some plays behind you. And especially for Zach Hess, LSU's defense made a couple of terrific plays in that game to secure a 1-0 victory.
He is Jeff Palermo. He was on the call of the games this weekend, LSU at Georgia. Georgia wins the series 2-1. LSU's road record's now 1-6. And they've got, you talk about murderer's row. They go from Georgia to going to Starkville to take on Mississippi State, who's really, really good. And they only put up 40 runs this weekend in their series win over Auburn. That's right, 40 runs. Hess and Henry and whoever better be on their game, or this could get ugly.
Yeah, it could. I mean, this is a really tough stretch here for LSU to play, to go to Georgia, who I think is one of the best teams in the country. I mean, they came into the series ranked number 5. And now you got to go, you play McNeese Tuesday night, and now you got to go to Starkville and play a Mississippi State team that just won 20-15 over Auburn, who's ranked in the top 5 as well. I don't know of another SEC team that's got to face this type of schedule early on. And I think it can only benefit LSU. And I know Tiger fans get disappointed every time LSU loses a baseball series and they wonder what's wrong with the team. But you look at this past weekend, Jordy, that each game, even the game that LSU won 1-0, obviously, could have gone a lot of different ways. For instance, yesterday, it's only 314 down the right field line. Me and you, Jordy, can poke one out down the right field line at Foley Field. And their backup catcher hit a pop-up down the right field line that went for a two-run homer against LSU. Meanwhile, Zach Watson crushes the ball to left field, and their left fielder goes over the fence and robs it. I mean, that's a four-run swing. Yeah. LSU loses by two. Chris Reed hits a shot up the middle in the Saturday game. It's a line drive, double play. Hal Hughes gets picked off at second because he was starting to make his way to third. The next inning, Georgia scores two runs and wins. It was that kind of series, and LSU made plays on Friday, which Georgia didn't make. So each game could have gone either way, but there's encouraging signs from that series. We talked about the starting pitching, and it was good to finally see the bats finally come alive in the final few innings against Georgia because they were really quiet for much of the weekend.
Three runs in the first 25 innings until the final two innings of the final game. So, and look, this is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series against Mississippi State. Thursday, 6 o'clock. Can they change the game Friday and do it an afternoon game so we can watch LSU baseball and then watch LSU basketball? You got any stroke? You got any pull in Starkville?
No, unfortunately, I don't, Jordy. Unfortunately, I don't. I know it's a bit of a bummer, and then we had kind of the same situation on Saturday. We had the 12 o'clock Central start for baseball and 11:10 or something like that for basketball. So, yeah, it kind of stinks that they're overlapping, but I think this is going to be a great series coming up. LSU is going to get a chance to see the new baseball field there at Mississippi State. And I think if there's a concern still with this team is hitting. Like I say, it was good to see, you know, Josh Smith hit a home run, Daniel Cabrera hit a home run. They're too left-handed heavy, Jordy. And I've seen it. Georgia's starter on Saturday was a left-hander, and just he minimized those guys, the Daniel Cabreras, the Josh Smiths, the Antoine Duplantis, even Nichols last week. Every time those guys came up to the plate and sometimes Maneri has them all lined up like four straight left-handers.
Yeah.
They just brought in a left-hander out of the pen and limited those guys. They need someone other than Zach Watson from the right side of the plate to provide some pop. And you thought it was going to be Saul Garza, and he hasn't produced. He has really struggled. Drew Bianco is kind of the, you know, they got this platoon between Bianco and Beloso at first base, righty-lefty, and Bianco has really struggled. So I think that's going to be an issue throughout this season, especially when they go up against tough left-handers.
Yeah.
I mean, so there are some that want to say, hey, the lefty-righty matchup, it doesn't mean anything, especially in college baseball. Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
It's a significant thing, and I think it's something that could really hurt the Tigers. It's really amazing that they are so left-handed heavy at the plate, but they don't have one left-hander in the bullpen. It's just very weird that's the dynamic of this roster.
Really is. In closing, real quickly, my buddy Ben McDonald said the 7, 8, 9-hole hitters, just they aren't productive at all. What does Paul Maneri do? How does he flip this lineup and get production from top to bottom? I guess that's the biggest question mark.
Yeah, I mean, it would help if a guy like Drew Bianco would start hitting. Saul Garza, if he can start hitting, he'd be a good number 7 hitter in this lineup. But Brock Mathis has done a good job blocking balls and framing pitches, but he's not giving you much offensively right now. His average is below 200. Hal Hughes is a guy that is hitting under 200. Maybe if he can get Brant Broussard going.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was doing so well last year, and then he injures his thumb. So, I mean, there's potential there. They just got to get some of those guys going. It really amazes me that a guy like Chris Reed is your cleanup hitter, someone that wasn't on your team 6 weeks ago.
That sums it all up. I'm sure you're traveling to Starkville. Keep up the great work, and thank you, my friend. Job well done.
Thank you, Jordy. I appreciate it as always.
All right, you take care. Jeff Palermo, he'll be in Starkville for the Thursday, Friday, Saturday games with the Red Hot Bulldogs of Mississippi State. We'll be back with more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
But sometimes too many good options can be overwhelming. That's why Indeed doesn't just give you access to a large pool of job seekers. We also offer screener tools that let you instantly narrow down your search. Hone in on hiring with Indeed. Increase your visibility to great candidates with a free sponsored job upgrade on your first job posting at Indeed.com/promo. The sponsored job upgrade is a $50 sponsored job credit. Users are charged once the credit is spent or expires. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Honey, I'm back.
Where is everyone?
Huh?
My family? You were supposed to pick them up and bring them over for dinner?
Oh, wow. When you said pick up the family, I thought you meant Jackpot Family, the new family of games from the lottery.
Really?
Yep. Funny. I guess that's on both of us.
What exactly about this is on me?
Don't forget to pick up your family, Jackpot Family from the lottery. Win up to $200,000. Collect all four. Must be at least 21 to purchase.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back. We've been all over the charts with LSU basketball and baseball and gymnastics and Michigan State basketball, but recruiting never stops when it comes to LSU and in football in particular, and that's why we called upon Billy Embody, our good friend from Go247 Sports. My goodness gracious, we have a clowny in the house. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well. Yeah, it was a big Saturday land for LSU to get Demon Clowney on board. He's the cousin of Jadeveon Clowney, who's the former South Carolina star and number one overall pick in the NFL draft. This is a big land for LSU. This is one that comes from well outside of what I would call their traditional recruiting ground in Baltimore, Maryland. But he was on campus for an unofficial visit, and he loved it and decided to go ahead and jump on board with LSU.
We were all, I mean, I was very puzzled because it became very apparent that Ed Orgeron had made it a statement by saying, we're up here in Baltimore, Maryland, and the LSU brand is strong, and it certainly has paid off. How did that all come about with Coach O, Baltimore? How did unfold the mystery to me?
Yeah, actually, he's got a long-standing relationship with this coaching staff out of St. Francis Academy. He's recruited the school for a long, long time, dating back to his time at USC. And like I said, has a great relationship with the coaching staff there. And so that was really what kind of jump-started this recruitment. He went over there in January and saw the coaching staff. And he offered nine players out of St. Francis Academy. And so really made it known that they wanted to recruit the school very, very well and very hard and paying off with commitment number one from the program.
Is the first name any factor into how good of a player this kid is as an edge rusher? I mean, if you're a demon, you got to be pretty good, I would think.
Hey, it can't hurt. It can't hurt. He's 6'4", 225 pounds. He's the top 150 overall prospect in the country, number 5 weak side defensive end nationally. So, I mean, he's got the talent, that's for sure. I mean, Clemson, Georgia, Michigan, plenty of others have offered him. So this is a big land for LSU.
Let's see if we can hold on to him. They went from crab cakes to a crawfish boil. That's not a bad deal. So hopefully that will work. Meanwhile, there's a local kid from Madison Prep. It's caused kind of a lot of anticipation because he decommitted from Texas A&M, a cornerback. Tell me about Major Burns.
Yeah, a lot of people will tell you having Burns in your last name might not be great for being a cornerback. But he is really, really impressed this spring. I mean, he has been a top performer at every single camp this spring. That goes back to the underclassmen national combine in San Antonio, just the beginning of January. That's really where he kind of he hasn't burst onto the scene because he's had some major offers, but he's really stepped up in terms of his weight. He's gained a lot of weight, good weight, and clocked in a 4.58 at the opening in New Orleans a few weeks ago. And he's been physical. He's got length. He can play corner. He can play safety. This is a versatile cornerback that LSU offered on Friday. He came over to campus and got a good sit down meeting with Ed Ogeron and the staff, and they kind of laid some things out for him and put the offer on the table. And so it's a big one, and we saw him back off from his Texas A&M pledge today.
What I love, Billy Embody, go 247 Sports. LSU's not afraid to bring in the best of the best. I was told they had the best offensive tackle in America visiting this weekend. Who is that, and tell me how that went.
They had Paris Johnson, the number one offensive tackle in the country, on campus. He's out of the Ohio state of Ohio, and I mean, he's about as good as it gets when it comes to offensive tackles. And Ohio State has him committed right now, so LSU has plenty of work to do there to kind of flip him. But he's a top 10 overall prospect. He's 6'7", almost 6'8", 300 pounds. So he's got plenty of size and good weight and all those things. And everyone from around the country really, really wants him, obviously. And the thing about him, though, when our recruiting analysts look at him and try to compare him to somebody at the next level, he compares to Andrew Whitworth. So, and we all know how good of a player player he is and was and all those things. So he's a first round draft pick. He's got that written all over him, and they'll certainly try to make a push, but it won't be easy to flip him away from the Buckeyes.
Billy Embody, go 247 Sports, a very quick visit with you today, and we greatly appreciate it. So it appears to me the class of 2020 is getting off to quite a start. Where do you guys have LSU nationally with this current? And how many commitments do they have now?
They're back up to 10, okay. And they're currently ranked as the number two class in the SEC and number three nationally right now with the addition of Demon Clowney. Miami picked up a recruit over the weekend and just edged out LSU for the number two spot. They picked up an offensive tackle out of the state of Florida who's kind of one of the big risers in the class right now. So they just barely jumped ahead of LSU for the number two class nationally. But number three overall in the country, two in the SEC behind Alabama. So good start for LSU.
Yeah. Sounds like it's the momentum is continuing, and that's always a good sign. All right, busy weekend of LSU football. We've got the coaches' clinic and all that kind of stuff coming in. So I know you'll be busy, but hey, thanks on short notice for giving us an update. So Demon Clowney, is he anything like his brother, his cousin? I mean,
there are very few that are ever going to be like Jadeveon, especially at the college level, but. He's not as I would say he's probably not as big of a physical freak as Jadeveon is, but he's got that defensive end mentality, and he's certainly a good one for sure.
Billy, thank you, buddy. We always appreciate the time. Take care.
You too. Anytime.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much. It's amazing that one play against Michigan, right? Jadeveon Clowney makes the play. That one tackle in the backfield, and he becomes a cult figure. Yes, indeed. We thank Billy Embody. We thank all of our guests today, Bill Armstrong, Mike DeFabo, Jay Clark, Jeff Palermo. Let's do a little quick little history lesson to wrap this baby up as we go back on this day, March 25th, the year 1975. The man that Rocky was built upon, Chuck Wepner, entered the round with Muhammad Ali, and Ali, a technical knockout in the 15th round, defeats Chuck Wepner for the heavyweight boxing title. On this day, March 25th, 1975. Birthday wishes, if today, the 25th of March, is your day, man, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share it with the likes of happy 72nd birthday to Elton John. Yes, happy 54th birthday to Sex and the City's Sarah Jessica Parker. And happy 37th birthday to Danica Patrick. I think she's still dating Aaron Rodgers, I think. I don't know. Anyway, she'd be a cougar, right? Yes. Okay. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary from all of us to all of you. Much more LSU baseball taking on McNeese. We'll preview that. Much more on LSU versus Michigan State and the Sweet 16. Oh, it's getting fun. It's getting fun. How's your bracket looking? Right. All right. CD, job well done as always. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We have only one Monday, March 25th. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow. Same time, 2 to 4 p.m. Same great station, 103.7 The Game, and around the world on 103.7thegame.com. Until tomorrow, I am Jordy Helfberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.